Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thriving Minds podcast. I am Professor Selena Bartlett, and today I'm joined by the amazing Jennifer Darling. She's a sales and marketing expert, and she's got a professional career spanning more than 20 years from companies and media giants like Comcast, Hearst Television, representing big brands, NBC, CBS, Fox, and many others. She operates her own sales and marketing consulting business now and coaching firm, and she's working specifically with women CEOs to help them raise their visibility, rise in leadership, I would say confidence to allow yourself to do that, and to bring up their sales results, of course. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I will share your link so people can learn more about you. But let's get started because it's quite exciting to have you here. And we met a long time ago, so welcome.
Yes, I've been following you around for 10 years. We just figured out.
So let's start off by saying you and I, we've known each other for a long time, but we recently really connected on LinkedIn through a post that really garnered my attention and lots of other people's attention. And it was about women on stages and screens and boardrooms. And you're really upset, as I have always been in my career, to, you know, it's enough. You just get enough. It's just like, why does this keep going on? And why do we always have to take 100 steps backward for one tiny step forward? So let's speak a little bit about that for everyone listening. Hi, everyone. We hope this inspires you into confidence to stand up and make your voice heard. So do you want to speak a little bit about what's inspired you to that post?
Yeah, so it's been under my crawl for quite some time. And I showed up to an introductory virtual meeting for a very renowned business school in the US. And I was interested in learning about joining a master's program with them called the Chief Strategy Officer. I thought, oh, this looks amazing. Within 2 minutes of being in the meeting, the host who's talking about the program shows a picture of the faculty. Now, this is a Chief Growth Strategy Officer master's program for global companies. And I look at the screen, and there was one particular kind of face missing, a woman. Of all of the faculty, 9 members of the faculty, there was not a single woman. And I couldn't even think anymore or listen to what they had to say. Within 2 minutes, I publicly on the chat room said, "Where are the women faculty? If you're going to be having a chief strategy officer training or education program, women need to be at the table." And they actually stopped the presentation. They stopped the presenter. And somebody else came on and addressed my question. Now, frankly, it wasn't a really great answer, if I'm just being honest with you, but I was at least glad that they addressed it and I planted the seed. And I started to feel like, no, this is just enough. This is enough. How can I be on this leading business company's webinar introduction about chief strategy officer meeting, a C-suite position for global companies, and not have women represented? And that's where I started to put my post, and I decided that I'm going to do something about this. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but I'm going to do something about it. And I started asking questions and putting things out there and making comments and statements that I believe. And I started to get some additional information and thoughts that really stretched and expanded my thinking about the topic. One of those came in the form of a neuroscience course that I took. I've been studying brains and consumer behavior and things for years. That's how you and I met. I have your book sitting on my shelf for 10 years. So I knew that could be one component of it. And that would be a component I could study. And then there were other components as well that people started bringing my attention to. And I started to think, How could we, what can we do? What do we need to do to start expanding women in business, and particularly women speaking? I'm in the speaking business, so I see very few women speakers compared relevant to men. I say screens because we're on a lot of virtual screens lately, and boardrooms, people making decisions. And those are the three areas I said we need to target more women being there. Now, what's next is, what do you do? Why is this happening? And how do you get there? And so that's a journey I have started to go down.
Yeah. And so I started in that journey in 1990. When was it? 90, around about 96. I was sitting in an auditorium. So I was a postdoc in neuroscience at that stage. So I'd already done finished my PhD. And there were only two women professors in that room. And it was a big room full of people. And it was a guy stood up, actually, and said, we need to create positions for women that only women can apply to that are senior roles. This is in the 90s, so that other young women like myself at that time had people to look up to, that also had families if they wanted to, that didn't have to give up everything to have their career. And the only two people at that time that shot down that proposition were the two women professors in the auditorium, because they had to struggle so hard to get there and become more like the male kind of model of, you know, playing golf and not having children and stuff like that to succeed in getting where they were. And they didn't want an easier path. And so I think that's also really interesting, that I think this is partly why we're our worst enemy as well. So it's such a complicated scenario. It's not that men don't want women there necessarily. It's also very complex situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I've had the same experience myself. Now, I know there are a lot of different people who have different experiences, and some people feel their males have shot them down. I get that there are people, but that wasn't my experience. My experience is actually more so along that I had men, figuratively speaking, leaning down and having me climb on their shoulders to get to the next level, the next level, the next level. I had a lot of male support. And the women who were ahead of me would shut me down. More so women shut me down. I decided to do a short, like a TED talk about it. It was about 7 minutes. And it got recorded and it got picked up by a global podcasting company, and they put it on their Facebook page. I was told it was going up. And that morning I was to go watch it go up and start to comment on any of the comments to help it go viral. Well, within an hour, I had several hundred thousand comments and views. Sorry, views, hundreds of comments. And I was feverishly writing back until I started getting people to say I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't understand anxiety. Why was I saying? And most of these people were people who had anxiety. They were people just like me. So I experienced it both from women shutting down other women, and then even from a wellness standpoint of anxiety people shutting down anxiety people.
So, Jennifer, with your extensive experience working with people and everything you do, then what's been your understanding of why you think that happens?
Yeah.
I'm interested in your perspective.
We're shutting down each other, ourselves. Like, I should be in a community with these other people. We should be supporting, and yet we're shutting down.
Yeah, why do you think?
I think what's happening is this. I don't know this for certain. But here's what starting to come to a conclusion. I think from what I have studied that male and female brains are operating systems, operate different. Now you're a scientist, so you could confirm this, but I think our brains operate different. And I think what's happened is that our business world, really our culture is built around business, has been built off of a masculine military model. And it is a chain of command, hierarchy. And it worked really well in the Industrial Revolution. Works really well for military. But that's how male brains think and not female brains. So you put a woman in a man's world, in a man's business, and one of two things I think happens. We start taking on more quality, masculine qualities to fit in. We do it because the other option is we have more feminine qualities and those get shut down. So what do we learn? What does our brains learn by not even thinking about it? When you get shut down over and over again, you find a different way to do things and you start to conform. But it's not just in business. I'm realizing it's really institutionalized. It's in schools. Starts before we even get to business. It's in schools. So I'm thinking the reason it might happen is because we are trying to have our female brains operate differently. And the successful ones, in order to do that, I don't know if they've changed their neural pathways or something has shifted.
Well, that's a fantastic observation and conceptualization. So let's go through the neuroscience of that just for a little bit. I know this was not in the questions, but I think I can use both personal experience plus scientific evidence to support and back up some of that. I can't speak to exactly definitely the industrialization definitely made us conform. The school system was built for that, to make us conform and everything. But let's just speak to the male-female work situation and how the brain operates and how it's shaped by our experiences. So let's just start there and have a conversation around that. And then this is going to resonate with a lot of people. So everything about the brain is a sensorial experience. So it is like a supercomputer updating. So everywhere you put yourself does affect how your brain and experiences and how you end up behaving as a consequence. So that's why it's so critically important to become more aware of the situations you put yourself in, because I've been in that exact situation you describe, and I'm not going to name places, but there is that very dominant competitive culture, and I don't know if it's male or female, but probably is, because women only started really seriously working in these kind of places only really in the last number of decades, to be honest. And what I experienced personally too, Jennifer, is, and I had to make a decision because of this, is that I either was going to become like the system and the environment that I was experiencing, which was highly competitive, and I was succeeding in that environment at that point. But I could see that if I was to choose to stay, that I had to become that system to succeed and change innately my own personality as a consequence. And I just got the gift of being woken up to see that that was going to happen. So I was able to divert and leave the US and come back to Australia at that point, which allowed me to reset somewhat my nervous system. But by the time I got back to Australia after 12 years of a highly competitive and successful career, I was dead as a doornail. I'd put on a huge amount of weight. I was stressed out. I end up getting divorced from my marriage. I was not aware that that was taking place. So what you described to me really resonates with me. But I fortunately got a 12, or now it's 14 years, I got to divert my whole system away from that, which I'm very grateful for. But I can see what you're talking about. So you can see that how we have to, if we want to stay and succeed in a certain environment that's been established in a certain chain of command system, you have to stay to succeed, don't you? And you do get changed as consequently, and you do lose some of your innate spirit as well.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt. And there are other things, there are unspoken rules that happen in businesses. And what ended up happening for me is I understand getting sick. I was sick for 1 year. I had something like 50 something appointments between medical doctors and therapists about my health. And I was in a high stress environment, and you worked as many hours as you could humanly possible work. And the environment was highly competitive. I mean, I'm talking super competitive, hyper competitive.
You want to
environment.
Describe some of the, if you don't mind sharing.
Sure. No, I do not mind.
So people can, like, it's better if you talk more realistically about what was actually going on, if you don't mind, because that will help people really.
Absolutely. So there, and there were numbers of things going on. So it's really hard. I'm finding that things are more complex, and we want our brains want it to be simple, but it's not. It's so complex, right? So what was going on? We had multiple, there were multiple departments, and there was a single manager, male manager, and he had favorites. And if you weren't in the favorite group, you had to work, and not just you. I was a manager leading a team, so I had to work extra hard. And then the people, 7 to 10 people reporting to me, had to work really hard too, because they were under me and
Top
I wasn't
down.
A favorite. Yes. We had bullying. We had sexual issues left and right. And if you were to be a whistleblower, you would lose your job. Everyone knew that. Now, that wasn't the company stance. The company, which was a huge company, the company stance was they welcome all of that, and it's all about culture. But once you were actually in the pit, in the environment, that's when you saw what really happened.
Terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. And then if you add on top of it that wellness was not a thing you could talk about. So as a person with anxiety and panic disorder, I actually I haven't suffered from a panic attack in 15 years, probably since that job, but I was having them then. And so if I got sick or I needed a personal day or whatever, that just was not, that was not good. I never cried. I learned that men typically have more, they put their emotions out in more of anger. You know, my husband's mad. He might punch something, physical anger. And women, not all, but women tend to show emotion through crying. I never cried. I was not a crier. And certainly in business, you do not cry. There's no crying in business.
Yeah.
That's a natural emotion for people. And yet you are not allowed to cry in business. You're not allowed to take a day off because you need a mental health day. You're not allowed to do any of those things. So there are all these unspoken rules. So when you're not feeling yourself, you're not feeling productive, you're not feeling happy, there's nothing you can do but go back to work and be more competitive.
So
not only were we competing with each other, we were also competing with our boss, because if we weren't the favorite team, we had to compete against him and his favorite team. So instead of being a community and being competitive against our competitors, we were competing against internal and
this
external.
Happens. I don't know a business where this does not happen, or an organization.
Wow.
So can I ask you then, like, when we think about this, and we think about how to be more successful in business, doesn't it make sense, therefore, to not have favorites? So how do you stop yourself? Because then you're leaving out a huge number of brains from your ability to succeed. And it's a natural tendency, because we're tribal, we're a social species. We think we know our tribe, and we like people that are like us, which is why we tend to have favorites, because those people seem like they're like us, therefore I trust them. Where it could be just quite the opposite, because people are being very manipulative, to they're mirroring you because they know that you have favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is all goes down to
neuroscience. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Let's help people out there. We're not just, so we've laid out the problem. I think that's for everyone to resonate. I'm sure anyone listening that's in a workplace can resonate with these same things. I've fortunately got myself into the first time in my career to be with someone that actually understands about not having favorites. And that's totally transformative for our workplace, to be really frank. Never experienced it before. So how do we help people that are leaders develop an open mind so that they can go against their natural instincts to want to only talk to people like themselves, or only include people like themselves in conversations? Because this goes straight back to that question about females and diversity and inclusion in terms of having more voices in your collective decision making, and how that really can transform your business. I'm sure you've thought about this a lot as well.
A lot, and I have 5,000 thoughts going through my mind right now, so I'm going to do my best to simplify it. I think when I work with leaders, and in my experience being a colleague in a leadership position, what I typically see is that leaders tend to think there's something wrong with everyone else. How can I fix my team? How can I fix my team? When the very first thing we need to do is look at ourselves. And when we look at ourselves, we need to understand that we all have biases. We all do. And so, how can we learn about other people and learn about their strengths and how to coach those strengths? We need to learn about people's preferences and their lifestyles. I think as leaders, we have a big job to do in learning about ourselves and learning about other people.
Like
I just took,
I have to break you right there, because that is the number one thing we always talk about, isn't it? In all my work and everything that we do, the hardest thing is to look at yourself. And because of the way mirror neurons work and the fact that we're a social species, and that's just how we learn, is through other people. So if your team is bad, it just means that they're mirroring what you are doing. That's a very hard reality to face, isn't it? But really good
It really is,
leaders.
and it really takes
Guts.
conscious effort, but it takes a conscious effort because we're not doing this on purpose. I don't think we're
No,
doing it
no,
on
no.
purpose.
No, we're not.
I
It's
think we don't
totally,
even, there's not even awareness that we're doing it.
absolutely not. It's in the subconscious, but we do see the subconscious for the first time in
Right. So, but
history.
I think we need to stop and say, let me question everything. Let me question everything. I went to my second drumming lesson today. The very first one I went to, I was nervous. I was so scared. I knew I was going to stink at it. Why did I even sign up for these? I was already nervous, right? So I've already activated my, fight, flight, or freeze mode. I'm about ready to turn around and come home. I walk in, and there's a gentleman about my age, gray hair, long beard, tattoos. Huh, that's the owner. That's going to be my drum instructor. I think to myself, all right, cool. I'm good. He seems friendly. He looks normal. To me, it was a drum instructor. When this young guy comes out of the side, he's about 20, crazy hair, funky pants, not looking a thing like me, or I don't even recognize him. And he gets introduced as my instructor. I'm thinking, what? That's not my instructor. I need this guy. He looks like me. My bias immediately said, this young guy is not my guy. I mean, it was the age. I had this age bias almost, or maybe the way the guy looked or whatever. We went in the room, and within 1 minute, I was at ease. The guy was so awesome, passionate, supportive, wonderful. Now, I get the benefit of drumming with him, so I know that physiologically we are actually creating synchronicity in our brains. I get that part. And I walked away going, I had made this bias that that young man was not my guy. And the reality is, he was exactly the right guy for me. On the outside, we couldn't be more opposite. But when we got together, we harmonized. And I think that's what we need to look at each person and say, everyone has strengths. Everyone has something to contribute. Everyone is human and beautiful. How do we maximize people's strengths for who they are, not who we think they are?
So
How do
how
we do
so,
that?
so what are the questions that you have leaders ask of themselves so that they can start to open up on these biases?
I think it starts with look at how you respond to things. Look at how you respond. How do you respond to communication? And it could be, how did you respond to the last communication? Or when you had a gut feeling, or an intuition, or something that says this is maybe something's not right here. I'm gonna say, can you stop and think about the situation and how you might look at it differently from a different lens?
So you're saying it's really important to take a pause before you make a judgment, because once you make the judgment, it's really hard to take it back.
Yeah, these days I'm looking at three P's that I think are essential to business and leadership. And the three P's are pause, play, and people. And I've narrowed it down to these things because pausing is not something we want people to do in business traditionally. It's work, it's productivity, it's work, work, work. Don't take a pause. Only the pause is what creates innovation and creativity. The pause is what can help us reduce our stress and anxiety. And that pause can be in many, many different forms: visualization, meditation, listening to music. That could be a pause. Pause. That's hard for me personally because I'm an activator. I make things happen. I get things going. I move faster than the speed of light. You heard ready, aim, fire? I'm fire, aim, ready. I know that about myself. So how can I take what I know is my strength and how can I look at it and see where might that stop me? My friend Rex Miller just published a new book called The Genius Spark, and he looks at people's strengths. And he gives you two profiles. One is how you are in your genius, how you are when you're activating your top strengths. And what's the opposite side of that? What can people notice about you? So if I'm an activator and I'm moving forward and I'm, you know, I've got everything was due yesterday, how can I stop that and realize how that might also get in my way and ask other people? If you see this, he's so brilliant at this. He'll ask his team in front of a live audience. When you see this strength and you see the opposite side, how do you see that actually working in me? And he's open to receiving that. And that really brings a consciousness. It really raises the lens back so he can see how that. Once you have an awareness, I think once you have an awareness, you know how to relate, which earlier we're talking about, people don't even know this is happening. So how stop. Take a look, get tools, and have the awareness.
And so how have you used this in your own life?
Every day. I just used it as you and I were, before you and I got on the call. I was having a conversation in a Facebook group about people. Somebody posted, people are unhappy, and they didn't understand, why are people unhappy? And you get a number of posts from people saying, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is easy. I mean, it's kind of like, I think it's like you're saying, let's switch a light switch on and off. But it's not that simple. I've been working on my happiness for 15 or 20 years, and I'm still struggling. And fortunately for me, I've had the finances to invest in becoming an ontological coach and taking neuroscience and studying and therapy and alternative medicine. Like I financially have been able to do that. I understand a lot of people don't have the financial resources. The average person does not have the financial resources to invest in all of these things to try to figure it out. And it's complex. It is not that easy.
No, and it's
I
not a
listen.
switch. It's definitely not a switch.
It's not a switch. And so then,
go ahead. Sorry, Jennifer.
So then I have a man come on and he wants to explain to me why my theory that it's complex and that there's multi-layers, like children, 43% of kids suffer from trauma. That affects your brain. Or women, did you know up to, depending on the industry, up to 80% of women report sexual harassment? Up to 80%. That affects trauma, and our brain, as you know, will change based on our trauma. So how can we say that it's all in our control? And then you have physiological, biological, external forces. You have wars across the world. You have, we're still recouping from COVID. I mean, this is complex. It is not simple.
No, and I think you're in a bit of denial if you can be happy knowing that people are suffering in the world. You can't just switch on. And it's okay to have contentment and peace inside yourself and building on that so you can handle all the trauma and stress in your life. But at the same time, I in 100% agreement with you that yes, it is an inside job. Yes, it could be a switch and you can make those choices every day, which you and I do. It still doesn't take away from the fact of the world that we're currently created. And that would be a denial of other people's suffering.
Yeah. To
or
wrap up this
inequality, you know, there's
yeah.
a lot of inequality.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I found myself wanting to have an argument with this man. His idea of what's happening, my idea of what's happening, and I said, I'm not finding from scientific research what you're saying to be true, although I will agree that many of our circumstances are within our control. There's a lot we can do. I'm not finding that. And he comes back and says, from a psychological perspective, this is new, blah, blah, blah. And from he's coming from an anthropological perspective. Now that was new to me. I'm thinking he's talking psychology. I'm talking neuroscience. And he brings in anthropology. And at that moment, I said, what is happening here? I'm not wanting to have an argument on social media with a person. For one, social media is awful. And I said, you know, here's what I think. And this is where I had to stop myself and do what I would tell leaders to do. Pause. And I said, I think I'm not talking from a psychology viewpoint. I'm talking from a neuroscience viewpoint. And I think you and I could have a really brilliant conversation over a cup of coffee. And I hope we can do that one day. Because what I realize is we probably both are agreeing to some at some level about the situation. But again, it's more complex than we can just have in this social media interaction. And when you're a busy person at work, and you're a busy CEO spinning a gazillion plates, especially if you're a female CEO, this conversation needs to pause itself because it probably requires a lot more than I can handle in a 5-minute interaction.
Yeah, fantastic. I think a lot of us could learn from that. So now let's focus on the last part of our conversation here, Jennifer. We could have lots more conversations, I think, coming down the track. So what could, let's just focus now on female in business, CEOs, scientists, physicists. You know, we have not had a lot of physicists, philosophers, scientists that are females. A lot of science is actually, including my own that I did for a long time, is built off a male model because that's what we had to do. So now as we move forward, and I can see, I've read the book Eve, which is amazing by Kat. Have you heard that book? It's all
no.
Looking at science from a female perspective.
I love it.
It's called Eve. I highly recommend it. I bought 6 copies and gave it to all my women in my life who are all actually scientists that I know to base their new science around a female model. But let's get practical for people listening as we close out. So what are some strategies that females or, you know, whoever, doesn't have to be female, but people that are struggling to succeed in business or have their voice heard or listened to? I think you can have your voice heard, but having your voice listened to as a female is quite challenging. I find that too. The podcasting space is now very male dominated as well. And people tend to listen to male voices because of the way our brain's been formed to get that as an authoritative voice versus a female voice saying exactly the same thing. I don't know if you've noticed this as well.
Well, yes, because what we think about the female voice is we put her in a different category, which is that she's a jerk.
Or something, or not intelligent, or she
what
would,
anything no. else. She's just not the authoritarian.
Yeah. So what can we do to change that going forward?
Yeah. I think there are a number of things we could do. The number one thing I think we could do is consciously support other women.
I absolutely do.
And when I use the word specific consciously, we really need to do this because I think unconsciously we have a little bit of a competitive tendency like we talked about earlier, and we are unconsciously doing it. I don't know if our brains are wired this way or not, but I think that we are constantly looking for the bad in things.
The news is wired our brain into a negative direction. That's
yeah.
Right,
I mean, I worked for the news, so I saw it in ratings.
Yes, exactly.
I saw a TV station who wanted to share positive news. Their ratings plummeted.
Yes, I know.
So if we can.
It's the way the brain tunes in for negative to get the clip. That's the only way you can get clicks on your story is by having a negative story.
Yeah. So how does that work? We have to look at every female for what is it we like about that person? What is it we can connect with? What is it we can resonate with? I was watching a celebrity earlier today on a TV talk show, and it stuck out to me. I was like, I do not like this celebrity on this talk show. I just don't like her. I like her in movies, but I don't like her in this talk show. And I stopped myself and I said, Jennifer, here you are going right now. Not a celebrity, not like, you know, a person sitting next to me in an office, but I still wanted to practice on myself. What is it 10% I could focus on that I really admire about this person? And I said, well, I love her acting. I loved her in this movie, in this movie, in this movie. And how can we take that and go from there? That's number one. How do we support each other? How do we find a Shirzad Charmaine from, he's from Harvard, Stanford. Oh, he's the founder of Positive Intelligence. Says is like, how can we take 10%? There's 10% in everything that we could like. How do we start with that 10% and go from there? That's what I wish us to do as women, is consciously think about what can I like? What do I like? Not what can I like? What do I like? How can we support each other? And I think we also have a scarcity mindset. So I think we're naturally wired, or we have become that way. I see scarcity in a lot of places. So if somebody's in the past introduced me and said, "Hey, Jennifer, I want to introduce you to this person. She's from your old world, and she wants to be a speaker." Well, my first reaction is, "Oh, I don't want her invading my space." So I go into scarcity mindset, and I find a way to shut that door, don't answer, whatever. I'm tuning into that right now too, and I'm saying, okay, how could I help her? How could this be a positive relationship? How could I help her to advance women? That's the biggest thing. I think there are other things we could do, but I think to me, the biggest thing is, how can we support each other? How can we create containers, space, environments where women feel that they can speak out and be supported by each other? Because I think a lot of the guys are supporting us. I mean, for me personally, I feel very supported by a lot of men. It's as we get to the as we go back to the beginning of this, sometimes it was more the women hurting my progress, me, the reaction I had to their feedback.
Yeah, we can go back to evolutionary origins about that and competing for gene pool and stuff like that, but let's not on this podcast. But it does go way back to bacteria and other things.
Wow.
But I agree with you that it's very hard if we're in a male-dominated world and then we don't have anyone supporting progress for everybody basically. And one thing I noticed, as you know, I was just my father-in-law passed away, and I was there for his last breath. And what occurred to me during that time, he lived, for that generation, was they had it tough, and so they're very tough people. But he loved living no matter what, and he would drink a cup of tea, and after a mouthful, he'd just go, "Oh, lovely jubbly." He just loved the mouthful of tea every day, like he just really appreciated living. And I took a lot from him. But what I also noticed was who surrounded him at the end. And 100 people for a 91-year-old at their funeral showed up to
Wow.
honor him because of the money he gave silently to the community. And he was a fireman, et cetera. But the thing I noticed is that what you do give out, you do get back in some sense. So as you support more people that are disadvantaged or have unequal access to power or money or opportunity, and you open more of those doors, you get bigger doors open for you. And I know it shouldn't be just about an equation, but it is just something about the science that we don't understand yet. Because the thing we do know about science is that every day something new is revealed. And I just want to also alert you to the new science. So Joy Hirsch, I interviewed from Yale, and she's opened this whole new area called the neuroscience of two, demonstrating, as you pointed out, face-to-face interaction causes much greater brain synchrony and activation than if we're on Zoom, unfortunately. I mean, Zoom allows us to have these conversations, but at the same time, we need to make sure we incorporate face-to-face interactions because it alleviates anxiety and promotes social connection, and it helps our brain health. So that's a whole new area that's opening up in neuroscience. So, and that's what we're doing, right? We're trying to create conversations using these platforms so that we can reach people that are feeling a bit low or feeling disempowered to say, we support you, and reach out, and we will help you to thrive.
I love it.
So thank you, Jennifer, for all the work you're doing. Do you want to finish out by saying something that you might be wanting to share with others that you haven't had the opportunity?
I would love to. I think as women, we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to get our voices out there, and not just for ourselves, although yes, it should be for ourselves, but also for the other women leaders. I don't have kids. I have a lot of nieces and nephews, and I have two nieces who are in their mid-20s. They're my future CEOs. We're going to start a healthcare business in a couple of years. We already know what it is. We already have plans. And I look at their lives, and they're 25 and 26, and they are stressed out and maxed out at
Really?
That age.
Really? What's happening, Jennifer?
They're overwhelmed. They have
What, from
school,
university?
they have family. Well, there's two different, they're sisters, and they're two different. One has university, very, very strenuous nursing program. The other has kids and a job. She's working and she has kids. And the world is just overwhelming. It's a lot of pressure of younger people,
Why,
especially.
What is the pressure that they're telling you about?
Financial is a big one.
Because of the cost of
Financial,
going to school.
everything is so, cost of going to school, one, food, cost of living, gas, all your basic necessity costs are through the roof. It is hard to make ends meet when you're a young person. It's tough. And so they not only have the financial pressure, they also have the pressure of school or raising a family and working. One works and raises a family, the other goes to school. They also, I think there's a whole, there, we could talk for an hour or 5 days about social media. I think there's a social media pressure that they have. I mean, I think we all have. I think we all have the social media pressure. Been experiencing it since they were children, right? So the social media pressure, all of that, it's so much more pressure. And I think as women leaders, if we can support them by leading the way, by being mentors, by being coaches, by putting our voices out on platforms like LinkedIn, which is, we have free reign to do, and it's this big social media platform, and showing them what female leadership could look like, they will have something to aspire to.
But also,
because when
not
I go,
the pressure,
yeah.
right? It's more about don't make it all about Instagrammable moments. It's also
yeah.
about living your authentic life.
All of that, and self-care. We haven't even gotten to that conversation either, but making self-care, making yourself a priority. If we can show them the way, that will be good. Until now, the way has been through seeing what male leaders have done. And we need way more female leaders, for females, rising females, to see how it could be done different, how we can break the rules and get to new heights.
Yes, thank you so much. I just thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we should have another one in a month or so, if that's okay with you. There's so much work to be done, and we need to. It's only occurred to me in the last probably few months just how critical these conversations are. As I've learnt more and more about the absence in science, philosophy, physics as well. And also, I just finished a counselling diploma, Jennifer. And
did you really?
To see what we're being taught and why we're still struggling. And I noticed that most of the theories, they're all male psychological theories that were being taught, but the majority of the classes are being taken by females. And that seems outrageous to me. And so I think there's so much that needs to be done in the next 100 years or so as we move forward to have a more inclusive voice. And it's not just about gender, it's also about race and
inequity. And neurodiverse groups. I mean, that's a whole other opportunity to raise society.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. As we close it out, look forward to having you on again, and keep up the good work, Jennifer. And I look forward to hearing about the next part of your career and journey.
Thank you so much.